Chapter 8. Sini carefully unfolded the rest of the butterfly. The message had been scripted in pen, the copper-toned one Emery kept on his nightstand. The beautiful, flawless curves of each stroke made her smile before her mind even sorted out the words.
I hope this finds your room, and not the housemaid's. There's nothing like jam and cold bread to make a man appreciate a woman.
Setting the butterfly down, Sini retrieved a few pieces of paper she had packed into her bag. It was always smart for a folder to carry a personal supply, and wrote out her response in the center of a white square.
You wouldn't be in poor company if you hired a cook.
Prit does.
I need to write a letter to Magician Avioski and thank her for assigning me to you and not him. I don't know how Bennett has kept such a stiff upper lip working with him so long.
She paused, wondering if she should be careful with names. Shrugging, she folded the square into a crane, slipping a farthing into its belly to give it some weight, should a nightly wind try to interrupt its course. Then she folded a link to a chain spell, only one, for the crane was small, out of a portion of the butterfly Emery had sent.
Lock,
she said, and the link tightened around the crane's torso without interfering with its wings. The spell would ensure that only the man whose handwriting was on the chain would be able to unfold the crane. Anyone else would destroy it, trying. Uttering instructions to the bird, Sienny sent it out her window and watched it fly off through the last tendrils of sunlight. Fennel whined at her ankles, an unsurprising complaint, for she had neglected him most of the day. If nothing else, he would provide some entertainment while Sienny waited for her paper charm to fly across London. Lighting a few extra candles, the mansion didn't have electric lights in most of the guest rooms, Sienny threw a knotted stocking back and forth for the paper dog for several minutes before slipping into the lavatory to wash her face and change into her night things. She tied a robe around herself, even though she had no intention of leaving her room. One could never be too careful about avoiding peeping toms in a new place. Fennel huffed at her, and in the spaces between his enchanted breaths, Sienny noticed how silent the large house really was. Someone could drop a fork in the kitchen two floors down, and she'd hear it from up here. She rubbed goose flesh from her arms. With his room directly beneath hers, Bennett had the benefit of hearing her floorboards squeak. Sienny's eyelids were growing heavy by the time a second gray butterfly flew through her cracked window and landed gracefully on the breakfast table. Like she'd done with her crane, Emery had fastened a privacy link about the spell's body. His managed to look much more refined than her own, despite sporting all the same folds. She unfolded the butterfly and read,
It will do wonders for your patients. Don't let him postpone your test, Sienny. You're ready. I have every confidence in you. And I do hope you're not focusing too strongly on young Bennett's upper lip.
Sienny smiled as she reread the message, rubbing her thumb over the coppery mark where Emery had smudged the word young. Abandoning the table, Sienny pulled her pink lipstick from its place in the set of drawers and carefully smoothed it on, then pressed her lips to the center of another square of paper. She penned, Only yours, on the sheet before folding it into a bird and whispering,
Breathe.
It appeared that Magician Bailey's hired chef did not report for breakfast. So early the next morning, Sienny acquainted herself with the kitchen. The room was enormous, of course, with two ovens and three enchanted ice boxes, a bar with stools, a wine cabinet, and a long casual table built to hug the far corner. The cupboards all matched the dark wood stain of the floor, and the counters even boasted a small preparation sink in addition to the normal one. Sienny had started eggs and hollandaise sauce when Bennett, hair still wet from a bath and with newspaper in hand, came in.
I see you've situated yourself well,
he said, stifling a yawn with his first two knuckles. He pulled over a stool and sat, spreading the social news section before him.
What, are you making?
Sienny held up an egg.
Would you like some?
Bennett's shoulders sagged as he let out a long sigh.
Yes, please. I'm starving, and I love hollandaise.
So does Emery, Cianney almost said, but she bit back the comment quickly enough. She substituted, I'll try not to burn it. Should I make enough for Magician Bailey?
Magician Bailey already ate,
sounded a third voice from the hall. Pritwin Bailey walked into the kitchen, well-groomed and looking just as pale as he had yesterday, a piece of paper rolled like a scroll in his right hand. His tone was chiding.
Good morning,
Cianney offered, trying to be pleasant. She needed to make a good impression on the folder, even if he seemed uninterested in impressing her.
I apologize for not being up earlier.
Magician Bailey scoffed.
Does Thane use you as a maid, then? Cooking his meals, cleaning his windows, folding his laundry?
Cianney almost swallowed her tongue to withhold the retort that tried to slip out. Then, to her dismay, the faintest blush betrayed her. She did do all those things, actually, but that didn't make her maidly.
I just wanted to bestow the gesture, she said.
Her voice sounded sweet enough.
Hmm,
Magician Bailey replied. He set the rolled-up paper beside the stove.
I'm not one to waste time, Miss Twill. Here is a list of projects you'll need to complete before I will test you.
Cianney dared to stop stirring the sauce long enough to unfurl the paper. A cold shock struck her chest.
There has to be 50 or 60 items on this, she exclaimed, reading over the bizarre requests.
Number 1, something to open a door. Number 2, something that breathes. Number 14, something to hide the truth.
58, specifically,
Magician Bailey said, his face as stiff as his thin frame.
Standard. I suggest you get started when you're finished with your gesture.
Cianney set the list down and stirred her hollandaise before it could stick to the bottom of its pan.
I need to fold something for each number?
It is a folder's test, Miss Twill,
Magician Bailey said while raising his eyebrow. To Bennett, he said,
Your report on chapters 15 through 21 is due at noon.
I'll have it to you,
Bennett said.
And your lesson at 1.
Of course.
Magician Bailey nodded and turned from the room, not allowing Cianney another second of his time. Cianney released a grumble and took the saucepan off the stove.
Intolerable! I almost don't blame Emery for picking on him at school. Is it done?
Bennett asked excitedly. At least Magician Bailey's sharpness didn't penetrate his apprentice's good humor. As Cianney lifted her head from the sauce, however, she glimpsed an article title in the lower left-hand corner of Bennett's newspaper. Magician's Cabinet to Rule on Opposite-Sex Apprenticeships. She trailed, turning her head to try and read the script, but the letters were too small.
Done enough,
she said.
Could I see that paper for a moment?
Sure.
Abandoning the saucepan, Cianney scooped up the page in question and skimmed the article, pausing on one paragraph in particular.
It is in part a means of decency, said Magician Long. We've had several complaints in regards to mixed sexes working together, from apprentices to magicians to even family members. When the ruling is approved, and I believe it will be, any apprenticeships not involving same-sex pairings will be split and reassigned. In today's England, such measures must be taken before scandal erupts.
Several complaints?
Cianney thought. Surely not about her and Emery. Surely. So few knew. Magician Avioski wouldn't have reported anything, would she have? And Cianney knew her mother would never have said a word. She had seemed rather taken with the idea of having a daughter in romantic league with a magician. She thought of Xena and felt her stomach sink. Surely Xena wouldn't have filed a complaint with the cabinet, and wouldn't it take more than one complaint to make a ruling besides? Cianney had to believe the best of her sister or go insane imagining the what-ifs. If nothing else, Cyani could take comfort in knowing Xena would likely be too lazy to fill out a report. How strange it all felt. She and Xena had never been at odds before, not like this.
What is it?
Asked Bennett.
Reassigned.
Cyani frowned. If she didn't pass her magician's test in 3 weeks, she might not be able to continue her tutelage under Emery. Perhaps she wouldn't even be able to stay in London. There was only one female folder of whom Cyani knew, and rumor had it she'd moved to the United States.
Cyani?
Oh, sorry.
She handed back the newspaper and passed Bennett a plate so he could serve himself. Bennett inspected the newspaper, probably trying to determine what article had so grasped Cyani's attention. To avoid conversation, Cyani examined the list Magician Bailey had given her. After scanning to number 58, she refocused on the first item. Something to open a door.
Open a door?
She wondered. As in a paper spell to open a door? But who would craft a spell to turn a handle when it could so easily be done without magic?
I have to pass this test, she chided herself. The stakes were higher now than ever.
She tapped the corner of the list against her lips. Jonto was capable of opening a door. Not that she had time to construct a paper butler, but it gave her an idea. Number 2. Something that breathes. Any animation would do. She could fold that in her sleep. Number 3. Something to tell a tale. Story illusion. Number 4. Something that sticks.
Sticks,
she repeated. Something sticky? Or something to stick to something else? A throwing star might serve a purpose there, but it would be best to come up with multiple solutions. Better to over-prepare than to be caught off guard. She had a feeling Magician Bailey wouldn't give her any clues.
Hmm?
Bennett asked, swallowing a mouthful of egg. He eyed her list.
I don't think I'm supposed to know anything about that.
Chewing on her lip, Cyani rolled up the list and stuck it in her skirt pocket.
Let us assume that I'll be very, very busy while I'm here, she said.
She eyed the newspaper and wondered if Emery had seen the article too. Cyani took the cushioned chair in the corner of the apprentice's study while Magician Bailey instructed Bennett on his next folding lesson. The study was about the size of Emery's library, which meant it was relatively small for the enormous home. It had a short bookcase half filled with books, a narrow shelf that appeared to be filled with homework assignments and notebooks, and a row of 6 desks, far more than necessary, taking up the east wall. A giant multi-paned window comprised the entire north wall, and the west held cubbies stacked with various lengths and thicknesses of paper. 2 simple chandeliers hung from the ceiling, both made of glass bulbs filled with pyre-enchanted fire, much like the street lamps in downtown London. They would light when the room grew dark and didn't require new glass or matches, though a pyre would need to come twice a year to rejuvenate their glow. Cyani had learned that from her readings on fire magic. Her attention wasn't focused on the lights, however, but on the number 14 on her list of tasks. Something to hide the truth. A blind box could work perfectly for that, unless Magician Bailey expected her to use a nullification spell on a fortuity box. That didn't require much in the way of preparation, however. Cyani would merely need to command the fortuity box unfold while the fortune teller used it, and she doubted the test would be that easy.
It will destroy the paper with random tears,
Magician Bailey said to Bennett from one side of a cherrywood table. Bennett occupied the other side. They both sat with rigid backs. The shred lesson seemed overly formal, in Cyani's opinion.
Observe,
he said, holding up a piece of unused paper. Such a waste.
Shred,
Magician Bailey commanded, and the paper tore itself into over a dozen uneven portions of paper. Bennett collected the pieces into a neat pile on the table surface. Once he had finished, Magician Bailey continued.
It works on various sizes of paper, and on active paper spells.
Sini twirled a strand of hair around her finger. Number 53, a means of escape. Emery's glider immediately came to mind. Could she use something that large on her test? She couldn't see why not, though she had a feeling the items on this list would need to be brought to and used in the test itself, and a glider large enough to carry her would be difficult to transport, especially if she didn't want it damaged during the trip. Unless she rode in on it. Concealing confetti, she thought. A trick parlor magicians loved to purchase from folders. Paper confetti that could be thrown in the air to teleport a person a very short distance, so long as it wasn't through a wall. She'd first encountered the spell in Belgium, when Emery had used it to circumvent Grath. Perhaps that would work. Too bad I can't just mirror teleport, Cianni thought. She fingered the charm necklace hidden beneath the collar of her shirt.
Miss Twill!
Magician Bailey's sharp use of her name drew Cianni from her thoughts. She lifted her head and dropped her hand from the necklace. The folder frowned.
Did you not bring a ledger?
She blinked. A ledger?
For notes.
Cianni cast a glance at Bennett, who rubbed the back of his head and avoided eye contact. Notes on this lesson? Magician Bailey sighed.
Yes, Miss Twill.
I know the shred spell, Magician Bailey, Cianni said.
And would a review not be beneficial to your magician's test?
Cianni felt as though her ribs had turned into vipers and were in the midst of attacking one another. She tried to smooth her eyebrows, which had skewed significantly in response to the folder's questions.
I'm quite familiar with the spell and have used it multiple times successfully. Taking notes would be redundant.
And what of other spells I may teach today or tomorrow,
Magician Bailey asked, his face looking even longer. The corners of his lips drooped into his chin.
Do you feel too experienced to benefit from them?
A blush threatened to creep into Cianni's cheeks, or perhaps it was a flush of anger.
I mean no disrespect.
Answer the question.
Magician Bailey,
Bennett whispered, but if the folder heard his name, he ignored it. Cianni sat up as straight as her spine would allow.
If I did not feel confident in my knowledge of folding, I would not be making the preparations for my magician's test. No, I don't believe I need a ledger. If by some means you teach something that Magician Thane has failed to instruct me on in his lessons, I will pay rapt attention, I assure you.
Magician Bailey snorted.
If Magician Thane believes he can cover every aspect of folding in 2 years, he's deluded.
The flush made it to Cianni's face this time.
You'll have to take that up with the cabinet then, Magician Bailey, she said, each word sticking to her teeth like saltwater taffy. The Education Board is the department that deduced a person could earn their magicianship in 2 years. I'm sure Patrice Avioski would love to hear your explanation as to why the department is in error.
Magician Bailey narrowed his eyes. A few long seconds passed before he said,
You're dismissed, Miss Twill.
Gladly, Cianni thought, but she dared not push her luck with more words. Rising from her chair, she smoothed her skirt and walked to the door with a paper list in her hand, fighting her desire to run, stomp, and curse the bloody man's name.
Deluded,
she mumbled to herself. She pinched her lips together, hoping the word didn't carry through the vast emptiness of the ridiculous house. If the man could hear anyone speak with that ego pressing against his eardrums.
No wonder this place is so empty, she added with a scowl. Who on earth would want to live with him?
She fidgeted with her necklace and daydreamed of going back into the study and turning pyre right then and there. How she would love to hurl a ball of flames right at Magician Bailey's head. She found Fennel scratching at the door in her room, his rubber paw pads thumming against the door jamb. She picked the pup up in her arms and scratched his neck.
"Sorry, boy," she said. "I'm sure Magician Bailey would love to despell you if you wandered into his line of sight."
Fennel huffed and wagged his tail, jerking toward the window. Another butterfly rested on its pane, a brief letter from Emery hidden in its folds. He recounted the dullness of his day and an invitation to a ball being thrown for new Tagus Praff graduates. He had likely been invited, since he might soon be free to take on a new apprentice. So they both hoped, anyway, at least if the position opened for the right reason, and not because Cne was forced to relocate and live with a female mentor. Of course, he claimed he didn't plan to attend.
Ah, how she missed Emery. And the thought of how Magician Bailey had insulted him, not to mention her, set her bones blazing once more.
She lowered Fennel to the floor and punched her mattress. That man was trying to be impossible. Cne pulled free her list of items to fold for her test and set it on the breakfast table, which was slowly transforming into a desk. It would be best if she started now. The sooner she passed her test and left the Bailey prison, the better.